Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 FM here in the Matsu Valley. And sitting beside me for our first live show of the season here on Mushing Radio is Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going very well. We just had the Willow Dog Mushers Symposium this past weekend, and it was quite a hit.
It was a hit. A pretty good turnout from what I understand. A lot of old-timers there, weren't there?
There were a lot of old-timers there, and they made for great storytelling.
Who was in attendance? I know people like to name drop a little bit. Who was there talking? I know one of the preeminent families was there, Mr. Dick Mackey.
Yes, that's right. Jim Lanier was there. Rod Perry.
The King himself, Jeff King.
Jeff King was there. Some sprint mushers, Reddington, Sellington, James Wheeler, Berkowitz was in the crowd, Vern Halter. He was the moderator for a couple of the speaking events, and I am forgetting quite a few other mushers that were there, but, you know, I had a table, so I was busy, and I wasn't able to eavesdrop on many of the conversations.
That's okay. So we are in the midst of planning for the mushing season, but before we talk about that, we're going to bring in the co-host for our yearly or annual Iditarod coverage, Alex Stein. Alex is a writer and director of a movie called Mush the Movie. He was up here just this past early summer, spring, to talk about Mush the Movie at a film festival in Seward. Alex Stein calling in from Southern California. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. I'm very happy to be with you guys for your first live show of the year.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Alex. I know that we're going to talk a little bit on a somber tone as we kick the show off, but this is important news, at least in terms of radio. Mushing Radio as it stands, and especially our yearly Iditarod coverage, we want to pay tribute to one of the largest mushing fans out there. She was very supportive of a lot of kennels out there. She was one of the first people to like everybody's photos and stories on Facebook, and just an all-around great person from my understanding, Allie Marie, as she went on Facebook. Alex, what is going on with Allie?
Well, you know, I didn't actually know Allie personally, although I think I may have met her once. But apparently, and I think you have more details about the specifics than I do, but apparently she passed away earlier this week. As you said, she was one of these people who was a tremendous fan of mushing in general, and the Iditarod in particular. You know, there's a real community of Iditarod fans and of dog mushing fans these days, and it's fostered by relationships through Facebook and other social media. And as you said, she was always one of the first people to jump in when there was something going on involving mushing, whether it was, you know, the unfortunate events with Jake Berkowitz's dog earlier this year, or if it was just cheering on people who had done well in a qualifying race, or people who were talking about mushing. She was very, very enthusiastic, and one of these people who is a vital part of the mushing and Iditarod family.
Go ahead, Michelle.
So a true Mushers fan. And, you know, I saw a lot of the things that Allie would comment on, and I always took her comments to be so positive and uplifting. She was always a sweet, sweet person on Facebook and on other things that I had seen her post about. What happened last year during Iditarod? Did she have something to do with that infamous pizza drop?
Yes. So one of the great things about the Iditarod family, and I mean the extended family, which includes all of the people who are fans all around the world, is over the past couple of years, people have been able to, as fans, get much more involved with the race and be much more active participants. A few years ago, the teams did not have GPS devices on the sled, so it was, once they were outside of a checkpoint, it was difficult to know exactly where anybody was. But in the past couple of years, all of the sleds have GPS devices, and people can subscribe to the GPS thing through the Iditarod Trail Committee, and then you get pretty much real-time data about where someone is and how fast they're going. So that's made it a lot of fun for people observing the race, whether they're in Alaska or, you know, in Africa or anywhere else in the world. And one of the things that happened, and I think this has happened for the past couple of years, but it happened a lot in 2013, was there is a pizza place in Unalakleet, which is called Peace on Earth Pizza. And it's one of these places where they will, you know, in typical Alaskan fashion, you can order your pizza and they will come and deliver it to you anywhere in the Unalakleet area on a snow machine. So the race fans started ordering and paying for pizzas when they knew that some of their favorite mushers were about to come into Unalakleet, so that the pizza place would take the order from the fan, and then would go and deliver the pizza to the musher on the back of a snow machine. So, you know, when someone came in and they were tired and hungry, and after they finished their dog chores, they'd turn around and there was someone on a snow machine with a pizza. And I know that Allie Marie was integral in organizing several of these things. I believe for Matt Failer and Karen Ramstead. Actually not this year, Karen Ramstead, but for Matt Failer and several other of the mushers.
And let's just be aware that Allie was in Tampa, Florida at the time. So that is the reach of a race like Iditarod. That's the true national and international scope of how these fans are following the race. And as you mentioned, Allie Marie was an integral part in organizing these pizza drops. And I know when it first happened, Alex, you and I were talking about it on our Iditarod coverage, and we were trying to figure out, at that time, we were very naive to it, and we were trying to figure out how in the world that could happen. You know, that was before we knew about, you know, all the behind-the-scenes stuff. But I remember on that night, we were saying, how is that possible that somebody could get a pizza delivered out in the middle of nowhere, and how did they know that they were coming? And I just thought that was such a cool story.
Yeah, and you know, of course, the pizza place loves this because they get a little bit more business that they might not have gotten, and you know, anyone who hears about this and finds themselves in Unalakleet, as you and I both hope to in the next year or so, you know, I think the first thing that you're going to want to do is to go to this particular pizza place.
Of course, I'm a pizza hound. I absolutely love pizza. I try to have it everywhere that I can. But again, we want to pay tribute to one of the biggest mushing fans out there, as she went by on Facebook, Allie Marie. I know she was a big fan of ours and our team at Eke Kennel and Dog Team. She was the first one to like our pictures and pay tribute. How I had found out about it, Alex, is one of my friends who happened to be in Germany had mentioned something on his Facebook wall rest in peace, et cetera. And I sent him a message and said, what happened to Allie? And he told me the story and said that this past weekend she was found passed away in her apartment, and you know they were trying to make sure that that her dogs were taken care of, her two dogs and a cat, and it became an international effort at that point. You know, people in Germany were using the powers of Facebook to find a home for a fan of Mushing's dogs and cats that had passed away. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Alex. This is truly an international deal. It's not just something that, you know, is followed, you know, the first week of March and then everybody forgets about it for the rest of the year, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I do not want to in any way get political, but I would just like to mention that seems these days that there is a lot of polarization and there's a lot of people kind of, you know, becoming entrenched and being only wanting to associate with people who share their points of view. And one of the great things about the Mushing community and the community of people who run and follow the Iditarod and other races is that this is really something that is unusual in the greater population that really brings all of us together. And I have a lot of friends, a lot of really good friends in the Mushing community who have all kinds of different political views that are very, very different from mine. And yet I find every time I talk to them that we have this amazing thing in common, which is our love of dogs and our love of the sport of mushing. And I, you know, Not to get too sappy about this, but I just would like to remind everyone, especially now when it seems like a lot of people are very, very far apart, that there are these things that always bring us together. And that is one of my favorite things about mushing and about the sport, is that it really has that capacity to bring people together, not just from the U.S., but as you said, all over the world.
Totally agree with that 100%, and that's one of the reasons that we do this show, is to bring that community together. I still believe we're the only mushing radio show, if not in the world, but definitely in the United States. So I hope we can at least tell those stories and pay tributes and give people information as best as we can, at least from behind the mic. But also, Alex, we had another person that happened to pass away this past weekend. You know, this isn't a show about passing away, so to speak, but when you lose a person in the mushing community, the community in of itself feels it. Can you tell a little bit about Waddy and his wife?
Yeah, so Waddy McDonald is a musher from Scotland who came over and ran the Iditarod for the first time in 2010, finished with all 16 of his dogs, was the only musher that year to finish with all of his dogs. And then he ran again in 2011, also finished, didn't have all of his dogs that year, but finished very, very respectably. He came over with his wife, Wendy, and several of their friends. Anytime you saw them around Anchorage, they were always wearing Scottish colors or wearing kilts, very, very colorful people. Waddy is kind of one of these larger-than-life guys who was always very, very friendly and always had something really wonderful to say. I spent a little bit of time with his wife, Wendy, in McGrath in 2010. She was a fantastic woman, very, very supportive, was just completely enraptured by the entire Iditarod experience. And he had, she got sick a couple of years ago, and Waddy was planning on running the 2012 race and decided not to, so that he could be with Wendy and help her, as she was battling her illness, and unfortunately she passed away this weekend as well. They are having a memorial service in Scotland for her, and I know a lot of people who are Iditarod fans and you know, people who follow the race were were very moved by Waddy and by, you know, his love for Wendy, and so that also is a very, very sad thing. And if we haven't said so already, and we may not have, and if not, I apologize. But obviously, we send our thoughts and prayers to the families and friends of both Wendy and Allie Marie.
Michelle, anything to add to this?
No, I just am. I'm really glad that we went ahead and featured this, even though it's our first live show for the season. It really shows that the community is behind Mushing 100%, whether you are a brand new fan to the sport or you've been a lifelong fan of the sport or you have been a fan and you've become sick and ill and unfortunately passed. Everybody out there knows that we band together as a group.
Well said, Michelle. So, Alex, anything else on this topic before we move on?
No, I think, you know, just that obviously when something like this happens, it is a very sad thing. And as Michelle said, the community, it really is a community. It really is more than just a group of strangers. It becomes a family. And I think the entire community pulls together when something like this happens.
So with that, we do want to send our thoughts and prayers to the families, and hang in there. Things will obviously be rough for a while, but I'm sure that as a community, we will pull through and mush on, as they say. Alex, calling in from Southern California this evening, what is the weather like down there?
Well, you know, the weather had been very, very warm. And it has gotten relatively cool, but as you know, that is a different thing here than it is in Alaska. So relatively cool for this time of year here means 50s and 60s as opposed to 80s and 90s, which is very different from you guys. I know you just had your first snowfall of the season recently, and while I'm pretty sure all of that's gone by now, I'm thinking that hopefully you guys will be out on the runners soon, training on snow instead of on the 4x.
You know, I sure hope so. That 4x4 training, as any of us will say, is boring. It is so monotonous, not only for the dogs but for the mushers as well. But yes, we have had a little bit of a dusting. Not as far north as Willow, which is kind of interesting. They've had it in Fairbanks and, of course, quite a bit in Anchorage. We haven't had any up at our place. But up in Tok, Hugh Neff is saying that they're dang near ready to get on sleds up there. They had quite a bit of snowfall in the last day or two. So I think people are itching to jump on the sleds and get started for the 2014 racing season. I'm looking forward to it. How about you?
I am definitely looking forward to it. I've been following a lot of people posting training pictures on Facebook and talking about their dogs and talking about their training regimens. And I am very excited for what I hope will be another great, amazing season. And again, I hope there's a lot of snow so that, you know, you won't have any of the race cancellations that I think have kind of been a factor the past couple of years.
I do, too. I know last week, Michelle and I kind of gave a calendar of events of all of the races that we knew of at that point that had already got started with sign-ups and gotten under the way, at least from that point. And several of those races, especially the ones down here in the valley, they're already full. I know the Connect 200 filled up in less than 24 hours, and that's one of those races in the last couple of years that has been hampered by that wacky weather that we've been having. I think it's only happened in the last two of the last 4 years. So one of those races that a lot of people count on, a very historic race in terms of early Iditarod qualifiers, which is going to be happening the first weekend of January, right after New Year's. And then we're racing all the way up through mid-April with the Kobuk 440. We talked about that as well. So, Michelle, I know we had a week to digest the calendar. Anything you want to add about that?
You know, at the symposium, a lot of people were not surprised, but concerned about how quickly some of these races are filling up. They are mentioning that that is a cause for concern. One influential musher in particular mentioned that to the entire group. I noticed that the Kinnick 200 filled up pretty fast, but it's a race that a lot of people want to run, not just because they want to qualify, but a lot of the mushers that are veteran mushers or are running veteran teams use that race as a way to kind of gauge where their training is at.
And what I found interesting, comparatively in years past, we aren't seeing the big kennels entering the four or five or six teams like they've done in the past. We're seeing just a couple of teams that are doing that. So I think that's changing a little bit as well, because when all the spots get filled up just by a couple of kennels, it makes it tough for those younger guys to get those qualifiers under their belt. Do you notice anything of
not,
that?
Not all the mushers that are rookies are younger.
That is true. We do have several mushers out there that are not wet behind the ears, so to speak. Alex, have you been following any race in particular in terms of the sign-ups or who's signing up for what or kind of the buzz behind the sport, so to speak?
I haven't been paying too much attention to that yet. I know that, and I'm sure you've talked about this, you guys have a race that you're starting next year. Did you guys talk about that?
We spoke about that last week. The Independence Mind 200 is going to be the week after I did a rod start right there in Willow. And, of course, we're looking for mushers and support for that, volunteer support for that as well. But, I think that's what's needed, Alex. The races are filling up so quickly that there needs to be a new race or two for folks to participate in. It's not always just the same three or four every year, because races come and go. I know that the Don Bowers race is no longer with us. It's a relatively small race in terms of name recognition. The Copper Basin hasn't announced yet when their signups are, and I know that's one that will fill up very quickly. It's typically the second weekend in January, one that a lot of fans follow. It has that international appeal.
The Sheep Mountain
150. It has not decided to run this year. That's typically the first race of the year. They've decided to hold off this year. So it's very interesting how things are shaping up. But my question to you, Alex, as a fan of mushing, when do you all of a sudden catch that bug and you really start watching? Is it Iditarod time? Is it the turn of the new year when the qualifiers are going on? When do you get ready and hyped up to follow the sport?
It's usually by the first of the year, sometimes a little bit earlier. Again, with social media, it is much, much easier to follow individual teams and individual mushers than it was, 10 years ago and even 5 years ago. And so people will start posting short videos of their dogs and some training runs, and that always, whenever I see something like that, I get very excited about it. I do have a question for you as a fan.
Yes.
So for me as a fan, a question for you. I guess this makes sense, but I guess I wasn't aware until recently that races actually fill up and have to turn people away. And I'm wondering what determines what the capacity is for one of these qualifying races.
Well, it's typically capped out by the amount of miles, of course. You don't want to have mushers all over the trail for days on end. You want to have it relatively compact in terms of people on the trail. And from my understanding, it's usually somewhere in between the 25 and 40 team range. I know that's a big range, but that's usually what can be handled out on a 200 or 300 mile race, and make sure everybody's completed the race at a regular time. Let's say a 300 should finish sometime late Monday afternoon, early evening Monday if it's a Saturday start. And of course, as the races continue, they're going bam, 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 one after another each week. So you want to make sure that folks can get on down the road, so to speak, and head off to the next race. And if you're in last place, so to speak, and coming in on Tuesday night and have another race on, musher meeting and whatnot on Friday, it's going to be tough to get there. Michelle?
You know, Alex, much like NASCAR, you know, some of those lower end races that they the drivers run in to pre-qualify for the upper scale races, they lock in. You qualify for those upper end races and even the lower end races that aren't televised by how well you do in pre-qualifying times. Mushing races are not based on pre-qualifying times, which would make it quite interesting if you asked me. But for the most part, the race manager typically goes, all right, I've got 200 miles to go, and if it takes the best musher X amount of hours to get from point A to point B with a checkpoint in between, and you know he's going to stop and rest here and there, you kind of evaluate the best time, and then you take the worst musher you can think of, typically it's right. yourself, and you take that time. In my case, I said, oh, yeah, it would take me this long to do that type of a race. And then you kind of squish the field from there. I mean, you would love to say that it's open entry and as many mushers as they want to come out can sign up and run this race. And you also want to make it where you could not put a limit on the dogs. But not only is the field limited to the number of mushers based on how long it's going to take them to get from point A to point B, it's also based on how many dogs you are asking people to have as minimum and maximum. I mean, you don't want somebody to show up for a 200-mile race with two dogs.
Right.
Right. So I don't know if that answers your question, Alex, but at least the best way I can put it for the fans that are listening, it's very comparable to the Iditarod rule. I believe we've talked about it before, Rule 36, that competitive rule, where they have to finish within a certain amount of time from the finishing musher. A lot of smaller races don't use that rule in particular, but it's kind of a given on how that's going to happen. Alex, we have just a couple of minutes since we are live tonight. We have to make sure that we end right on time. My question to you is, are you following anybody? And I know that one of our favorite mushers on Mushing Radio during Iditarod coverage is Karen Ramstead. I know that it's going to be her farewell Iditarod. She's going to retire at the end of the year. Are you following Karen or anybody else in particular at this point?
There are a couple of people that I am following and am very excited about. Oddly enough, or perhaps not, they are all women. Obviously, I perennially am a big fan of Allie Zirkel. So I'm keeping tabs on her. I still believe that she is going to win the race sometime in the next two or three years. I'm following Karen. Karen is a fantastic musher, and it would be great to see her go out with a tremendous finish. And I'm also following Cindy Abbott, who we talked about quite a bit last year, who is from Southern California and broke her pelvis, but then. Broke her pelvis, I think, 25 miles into the race and then went for another 600 or so miles before she had to scratch running Lance Mackey's puppy team. And she's now working with your neighbor, Vern Halter, and is going to be back and bound and determined to finish the Iditarod in 2014. So I'm very excited about her race as well.
You know, Alex, I spoke with her at the symposium. She's a very sweet, wonderful person. I wanted to let you know, since this show has been a lot about training, she is a little bit concerned about this ATV training that Robert mentioned earlier that is so boring. It's quite a challenge for her, and she's excited to learn a different aspect to mushing, and that is the all-hated ATV training.
Right, right. And I think that, I think that also there's probably a much different approach. I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine there's a different approach between how Vern works with people and and his dogs and trains them to run the dogs and how Lance did.
We'll leave that up to Cindy. She agreed to be a guest on the show this year, so we'll let her explain the differences.
Alex, we're just about out of time. Thank you very much for joining us this evening on both a somber evening here on Mushing Radio, but also a celebration not only of the folks that we spoke about, but also the sport of mushing in general. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you guys so much, and as always, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much. Alex Stein calling in from Southern California. My name is Robert Forto on behalf of our co-host, Michelle. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.